Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas, for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hey guys, it's Jordan Younger, your host of the Balanced Blonde Soul on Fire podcast. Here we go deep on all things astrology, awakening, wellness, motherhood, channeling, aliens, and so much more. We have deep conversations. We go to other realms. It's a lot of fun. So stick around. Let's dive on in. I cannot wait to connect. Hello and welcome back to the show. I'm so happy that you're here for a very special episode today with a dear friend of mine, Jessie McCartney. So now I should also say welcome to all of the Jessie fans. I know that you guys are a strong crew, and I'm very excited to have you here today. This is Jessie's first podcast episode, at least his first in a long time. And what an honor that I get to sit down with someone who I have admired for so many years and has become such a dear friend in my life. I won't give you too many spoilers about how we met and how we became friends, because that's how we kick off this conversation. But I can promise this conversation does not disappoint. We talk about Jessie's career, what he's learned, the pitfalls of fame, the amazing things, the harder things, and his incredible over 2.5 decade long career in music and acting. And he continues to do so many special things. He has a new album coming out. He has a new single coming out. He has a tour that he's embarking on in just a couple months, and just so many exciting things. I'm so happy to just have him in my life and his beautiful wife, Katie. They are phenomenal. And we discuss it all in this conversation. Cannot wait to hear what you think. If you feel inspired to rate and review the show on Apple or Spotify once you listen, let me know by emailing me, Jordan@thebalancedblonde.com, so I can thank you by sending you a free yoga ebook and also entering you into this week's giveaway of a huge wellness box of all of my favorite products. If you go see Jessie in concert in LA, you will definitely see me there. So come say hi. And we just got to get right into this episode. It's so special. So without further ado, let's hop on in. And lastly, we do have a March challenge coming up in my brand new meditation platform. It's so exciting. It launches on March 4th and I am over the moon about it. So we got to get you guys in there at this special founding members pricing. We have the link in the show notes. And we also have links in the show notes to Jesse's tour and all the amazing things that we discuss in this conversation. So with that, let's get into the episode. I've been on such a Jesse deep dive all day.
Oh boy, what did you find?
I watched so many videos of you this morning. I just wanted to see other interviews that you've done because Jonathan was telling me you've never done a podcast, right?
I have. I'm like not on this level. I did a few like years ago, like many years ago when podcasts were like in their infancy. But no, this is my first time.
I'm so honored. And I also can't believe it because I bet everybody wants to have you on their podcast.
Well, I'm overjoyed that it's with you. Someone that I know and love.
I know. I love you too. I feel so lucky. So yeah, I watched some videos of you on YouTube from like 3 years ago, 5 years ago. So fun to see you talking about your whole career. Yeah. You've had such a span of over the course of pretty much a whole lifetime.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of stuff to discuss.
We do.
Okay. So first, let's just get started by how do we know each other? Everybody's going to want to know whenever I post with you or anything. People are like, how do you know Jesse? That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, your husband, obviously, Jonathan, is a great friend of mine. And we sort of grew up together. I moved to California from New York. I was born in New York and I moved in the, it was like end of junior year of high school. Didn't have many friends. Came out here to work on a television show called Summerland, which was like a short-lived show on the WB before it was the CW. And I was briefly dating this girl who went to Calabasas High School named Katie Cassidy. Mm-hmm. And she was friends with all of these guys from school. And I was trying to make friends. So she introduced me to a lot of the guys that went to school there. And Jonathan was one of the very few guys, actually, that were very nice and kind to me and like welcoming at a time where, you know, you're a teenager and everyone wants to hate. And he was just like one of the good ones. So, and then we just stayed friends forever. Yeah. And then you came along.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was like 20 years ago that you guys all met.
I know.
I was just talking to Jonathan about that. And he was explaining it's since high school. So it's, in some ways, it's kind of like you went to high school with them, like grew
20,
up with
them. Yeah, 20 years ago. That's crazy to think about.
I know. Isn't that so wild?
It's wild. But yeah, so Jonathan and a few of his other friends that I'm still close with, Drew, who you know, and a couple of the guys from Calabasas. But yeah, Jonathan and I have just remained friends ever since. And we've had years where, you know, there was like a span in there where, you know, we didn't talk for a while just because our lives were changing. And then we sort of like, I don't remember the point in which we like sort of reunited and became buddies again, where we see each other often. But it's nice. It's nice to like have a core group of friends that you can still call back on like crazy memories from 20 years ago. Because I feel like many people don't have those relationships, you know, especially living in a town like LA where friendships are few and far between. It's just nice to have that like touchstone, you know?
It is. Yeah. There is nothing more special than having the people that you go all the way back with.
Yeah.
And to even have a couple of those people, it just feels so lucky.
Yeah. And you're so, I mean, he's lucky too. But you are so, like, he is just one of the most genuine, kind-hearted, just good. He's just a good person, you know, just
he's
inside and out.
Person.
Like, every bone in his body just, he exudes success and happiness. And he's a good one. I'm glad you guys met.
He has such a pure heart.
Yeah.
I love that you see it.
Yeah.
And so does Katie.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into that because everybody's going to want to know the whole story of how you and Katie met.
Yeah.
But let's take it all the way back to your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up in New York. Were you always a performer? Did you love being on stage, acting and singing?
Yeah, I grew up in a little town in Westchester, New York called Ardsley. It's funny that my friends kind of give me a hard time because they say you're the second most important person to come out of Ardsley. Mark Zuckerberg went to my school. He went to Ardsley High School. I think I was a freshman when he was leaving, when he was a senior going into boarding school before Harvard. But so like it was a very, very small town. So the fact that like anyone came out of there and, it was just kind of remarkable, and I still hear about that all the time.
That's so wild.
But I grew up there. I was born in Manhattan. I was born in Chelsea, New York in 1987. I'm the oldest of three. My mom and dad were both theater people. My mom went to dance school at UCLA and then transferred to Juilliard. My father was a theater major in Rhode Island. And they met in the city. My dad was a stage manager for the Rockettes, and my mom was out auditioning for theatrical productions. And I don't actually know where they actually met, but yeah, so they always had the musical theater bone. And when they had kids, they sort of raised us in that kind of household. And yeah, I think by the time I was like 4, 5, or 6, I would start singing to songs on the radio. And I think my parents could hear that I had a good ear and I could sing. And by the time I was 7, they were now doing community productions where I grew up, just in a small town, just neighboring Ardsley, in a town called Irvington. And they did community productions together, the two of them. And when I was old enough, I think I was 7, they said, "Do you want to audition for this show that's coming to the theater? It's called Oliver." And I was like, "Yeah." And I saw them perform all the time, so I just thought it would be fun. And that was my first time on stage. I was 7, and it was to play Oliver in this like little sort of Victorian style theater outside of Manhattan. And then, yeah, and that was sort of the birth of everything. But it all started as a family, affair. Both my parents were very musically inclined, but they both played piano and sang. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it started out as like a family thing.
That's so cool. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
Because that was one of my questions, was how did your parents know to foster this? You were naturally talented, but then at a young age, you moved to LA mm-hmm. and started acting in soap operas. Like, clearly they knew, we've got to pursue this because he's really talented.
Yeah, I think they saw something kind of early, and I was always a performer. Even in school, I had a hard time paying attention. I really hated school. Like, I just didn't enjoy the curriculum, what we were offered. I went to a public school that was a great school in Westchester, but it's just like I was not interested in math or science or history. I loved English and creative writing, but I could never pay attention. I've spent more time trying to figure out how to make people laugh in class and how to, upset the teacher, really.
Yes.
And I got kicked out of class a lot, but I was just always so focused on this one goal of wanting to leave school and perform and do things outside of the classroom. And so, yeah, I think they saw it early on, and they nurtured it like most families do, mm-hmm. whether it's you grew up in a sports family, you're big into athletics. We were into music. And yeah, and I think that it paid off.
Yeah. And then you moved to LA when you were how old?
I think I was 16. I came out for a pilot season, which pilot season is basically every year a bunch of networks shoot television shows that they hope do well enough, and then they pick them up and order them for a full season. I came out for a pilot season. It was the first TV show that, like, primetime television show that I auditioned for. And it was with Lori Loughlin and Ryan Kwanten and Zac Efron. And it was originally called Immediate Family. And we shot the pilot. I was like 15 and a half, maybe 16. And then flew back to New York and just waited. And we didn't hear anything for like a year. And I was like sitting in class. You can imagine, I'm already hating being in class,
yes.
waiting to hear if this big break is going to happen. And then it did. And it was just like one of these moments, like, I guess I'm moving to LA now.
Wow.
And it was like going into my senior year. So by the time I was 17, I was out here full time.
Oh my God.
I know.
And then when you were on All My Children and you were like 11.
Yeah.
You didn't live in LA during that time?
Yeah, that was early. So that was the first experience I had behind a camera during daytime, television. I think I was maybe 11 or 12, yeah. And my timelines are awful, so I'm glad you did your research.
I did.
But yeah, it was All My Children back in the day with like Susan Lucci and Michael Knight and Katie McClain, and Kelly Ripa played my sister at the time.
So
this is
cool.
Before she went on to do daytime talk show.
Uh-huh.
And I played her younger brother, and I was on that show for a few years. And I would leave school. It was in like 5th or 6th grade. I would do my homework basically in the car, and my mom would drive me down to Manhattan. It was like a 25-minute drive. And I would shoot all of my scenes between like 4 and 8 or 9 p.m., get back in the car, go home, go to bed, go to school, do it all for like 2.5, 3 years. That's
oh, wow.
all I did.
Okay, so that was in New York.
That was in New York.
But so you've always had
a work ethic. That's a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. I mean, I luckily was really good with memorizing things. And the one thing I will say about the soap opera world, it is a great place. I mean, you really, it's a harsh reality because you have pages and pages, 50 pages of dialogue. And I wasn't a huge leading role, but for an 11-year-old, it's a lot, you know? And so it really helped with my memory skills and being able to memorize big blocks of dialogue at a time. It was a great place to start. But yes, that was a lifetime ago.
Literally. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then there was Dream Street. Yep. So was that between those two things, the soap opera and Summerland?
They kind of overlap. At this time in my life, I was not just going down to shoot things, but my mom would take me down for auditions. So I got an agent, like a youth agent when I was living in New York. And I would go down to the city and audition for things like commercials and television shows and movies and all these things. And, you know, you'd book one here and there, but all my children happened, and at the same time, I auditioned for this boy band that they put together. It was originally called Boy Wonder, which is hilarious. And it was basically a cattle call of just hundreds of, you know, prepubescent kids coming in, singing, dancing, and auditioning. And they just sort of whittled it down over, you know, months. And we got down to like 8 guys, and then they basically, I think they showed us to labels and they brought in like focus groups of young girls to see who they liked. Yeah, it was a really wild experience. And then they finally cast 5 guys. And so Dream Street happened, I want to say in like 2000, end of 99, early 2000. And we got signed to Atlantic Records. And all of a sudden I was recording music and shooting this show simultaneously. It was a lot. It was full on.
Yeah.
But it's like, it was like everything I sort of envisioned and imagined was sort of happening, and these were the building blocks to what would become a full-blown career just 4 or 5 years later. And Dream Street was a big part of that.
Yeah, that's so wild.
I know.
Okay, we are talking Melissa Wood Health by Melissa Wood Tepperberg. She's been one of my favorite guests on this podcast to date, but that's not what we're talking about today. We are talking about MWH, her amazing movement, meditation, workout, nutrition, and lifestyle platform that can help you strengthen both your body and your mind with workouts, meditations, nutrition, and lifestyle content that you can easily commit to. So I started doing Melissa's workouts religiously during 2020 when we were all at home. She is such a good guide. She offers a blend of yoga and Pilates classes, which are my favorite thing, that sculpt and tone your entire body. And this year, MWH launched their 7-day Reset and Renew program that features both guided workouts and meditations, as well as a week-long nutrition program so that you can feel your best from the inside out. Melissa is such a profound thought leader. She's changing the way that people approach fitness and mindfulness. Most of all, I can just speak from personal experience. She has changed my approach to fitness and mindfulness. She's so authentic. She walks the walk. She makes me excited to get on her platform every day. She's just an inspiration. She's soothing. She's comforting. She's everything. So as Melissa says herself, don't trust me, try me. Visit melissawoodhealth.com and use the code BALANCED at checkout to get your first month for free off of your monthly membership. Such a big deal. That is MelissaWoodHealth.com and use the code BALANCED for your first month free.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I think everyone who knows me and listens to this podcast knows that I struggle with my sleep. I have been having a tough time sleeping my whole life, and it has always thrown me for a loop. But what I love, 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 is my Hatch Restore. It has helped me create bedtime and morning routines that make sleeping better such a priority. I love the Hatch Restore. I actually discovered Hatch because of my son, my toddler son. He uses a Hatch, and when he moved into his own room when he was about 6 months old, my husband and I looked at each other and we were like, we need a Hatch. So we got a Hatch Restore. It's a device that teaches your body when it's time to sleep and when it's time to wake up, with nighttime and morning routines so that you can prioritize rest. With Hatch Plus, you can access exclusive content like Pillow Talk, which is a new audio series designed to entertain you to sleep. Pillow Talk helps you wind down with the types of TV shows that you love, from true crime to sports, but without the screens that hurt healthy rest. And we all know, I certainly know, I am a culprit of using those screens. So this has been so helpful for me in just creating better sleep habits, which is one of my foundational tips for success and for living a truly successful, healthy, happy, balanced life. So right now, Hatch is offering our listeners $20 off your purchase of the Hatch Restore and free shipping at hatch.co/balanced. Visit hatch.co/balanced to get $20 off plus free shipping. hatch.co/balanced. You will love it. I had a crazy memory when I was going down memory lane researching you. I saw Dream Street.
Did you really?
I literally might have met you.
No way.
I think it was, okay, it was at like a larger festival. It was like I don't know if it was like a Nickelodeon or like,
probably.
I was young. So uh-huh. I was, because I'm like 4 years younger than you guys. Uh-huh.
I was going to say, because that you must have, I was 11 or 12 when I was cast. You were probably 8 or 7 or 8.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and yeah. I went with my mom and my best friend and her mom, and I met Dream Street. Like, I probably have a photo with you, and I just wish my parents were home right now. They're in LA, because I want to find it.
Like, I would die if you found that
photo. I'm going to look for it. I know that I have it somewhere, and it all came flooding back to me.
That's crazy.
Isn't that full circle?
It is full circle.
I know. It was exciting.
So where would I, so it would have been, because where did you grow up?
Sacramento.
Okay, so yeah,
I think
we did travel a lot.
In the Bay
so.
Area, okay, maybe, if I remember. Yeah. I mean, it's like a vague memory, but it was like, would you guys have been at like a Nickelodeon festival?
That's the thing is, like, we started out with such a like tri-state area New York following. We really kind of, it was like this grassroots effort, and we really built this fan base on the East Coast. But then once we got signed, we did end up traveling quite a bit and doing things like Disneyland and mm-hmm. performing at mm-hmm. Disney World and those sort of things, and Nickelodeon places. And so we did end up in California for a little bit there. So it is, we probably, yeah.
It totally happened. Probably, like, it is a memory that I now have recalled. I'm going to find it. Yeah. Like, it's amazing. So, okay. So then you were doing that and yeah. you were acting. Mm-hmm. And where does your, or at least then, like, where does your biggest passion lie between acting and singing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get very bored easily. And I also, I'm one of those people that I can't, like, I have, a hard time focusing on multiple things at once. Like, it's hard for me to put all of my energy into multiple things. Like, I need to really focus on one thing at a time. So I go through phases where I'll spend a lot of time just acting years at a time, and then switching over to music. To pick one is really hard. You know, I love entertaining in general. I think performing, it's sort of a broader umbrella, but it really is the truth. Like, there's no safer place for me than being on stage performing. So, and I think a lot of even performing in music requires a lot of acting, because you are putting on a show and you're, yeah, in many ways with certain songs, you're playing a certain character or role. I enjoy shooting TV for the mere fact that it's like such a great schedule. You know, I was on a show for Freeform Network about 8 or 9 years ago called Young and Hungry, and it was just such a good schedule. It was at CBS Radford here in Los Angeles, which was 10 minutes from my house. I'd wake up, show up on a Monday at like 10 a.m. We'd do some rehearsals till like 2 p.m. Day was over, shoot a couple days, and then you had like a 3-day weekend. It's like the best schedule, shoot a TV schedule, especially a multi-cam comedy. Music is a lot more demanding of your time and your energy. Touring is, it just gets harder and harder as I get older. But I don't know that I really have a favorite, you know? Mm-hmm. It just depends on what the actual project is, I guess.
Totally. And then during that time, that's when you blew up and became a household name. Beautiful Soul came out, and you were on girls' posters in their room all over.
Yeah.
What was that like to go from, you were working hard for this, and then to truly become so well known?
It was a whirlwind. And certainly Beautiful Soul, I think Summerland was like the big seed that was planted. Mm-hmm. And then when Beautiful Soul came out, that was a huge pivotal turning point in my life, where all of a sudden it went from like people in New York stopping me and like old ladies in Macy's, like, I know you from all my children, to like screaming teens.
Yeah.
And that was like a huge adjustment. And it's funny because there's a part of me that loves performing and loves putting it on. And then, but when that happened, I sort of for a year or so there, kind of retreated a little bit, because it was so much attention all at once. And, you know, with you have such a young, impressionable mind, and you're thinking so many things, and it's an awkward year too. I had braces at one point and terrible acne, and there was like things going on that I was insecure about. And then here I am, like in front of all these people coming up to me, and it was intense. I mean, looking back on it, I would never change anything, but it was, I'm just so happy I had such a great family and support system from friends and family that could sort of protect me and shield me from a lot of the BS that goes on. But I did grow up quick in those years. I mean, it was all of a sudden I was traveling to Japan and Italy and all these places I never dreamed of going. I barely knew existed. There were countries I was going, I was like, this, I didn't even know this was... I mean, like I said, I never paid attention in geography class, so I didn't know half of these places. And here I am stamping passport after passport, and it was incredible. I mean, it was just crazy that people overseas, the concept that people from a different nation would know my name and know these songs. Yeah, it was a whirlwind. And there was definitely some rough moments, but there was a lot of great moments, mostly great, you know, so...
That's so cool.
I know.
Yeah, it's amazing. That was the main question that I had for you, was you've been so grounded and so stable, and you've really come up as a child star, someone so known, and you didn't have one of those like public breakdown kind of things that a lot of people have, and you're not going to. Like,
No, it's not. You're
such a grounded person such a down-to-earth head on your shoulders and personality. So do you attribute that to your family, and also what else other than family?
Yeah, I definitely, like I said, I definitely, all of the credit for that, it goes to my folks who, you know, were just grounded people and very kind-hearted, good people. I mean, they just, they brought me up well. They instilled in me manners and ethics and all of the things that, you know, make you a good person, and they gave me a good moral compass, you know, and they were guardrails for me along the way, so that I could, you know, they let me sort of hit both sides, but always kind of kept me on the road and, you know, on the straight and narrow. And I certainly had moments where I felt like, in looking back, I could see like, ooh, that was probably getting to my head a little bit, you know, in certain areas. But I always remembered, I forget who it was. I'll think of who it was. Somebody told me, I think it was like Rosie O'Donnell.
I love that.
Had told me that, you know, just it's a classic saying, but like, you know, don't think this will last forever. And the people that you're nice to now are always going to remember that. And the people that you're not will definitely remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just didn't ever want that to be a thing where people had a bad taste in their mouth from an experience that they've had with me. And so, look, we've all had bad days for sure. But, you know, I think part of the responsibility of getting to that next level is to use that influence to spread good
mm-hmm.
and to be a good person. I've tried to always maintain that in my life and still, you know, so.
Yeah. And you do. You do an amazing job.
Thank you. And I've seen growing up of the mistakes that my peers have made. And just thinking like, oh God, I would be so embarrassed if that was me.
Yeah.
I'm still trying, you know,
What has that transition been like from like teen pop star with like this huge teen following who, by the way, is still in love with you and they follow me because I know you. Like it's so cool and amazing. Yeah. You're incredible. Fandom. It's so cool. What was that transition like then to now be like an adult doing music and all the things?
A married man. It's been really nice. And I think I found a lot more peace in the last, I would say, probably 5 years, even 10, but really the last 5 years, really since I met my wife, I've discovered like what really matters and like the things that matter in my life are just so different mm-hmm. from what mattered when I was in my early 20s. And for me, it's like, it's family and it's relationships and being outdoors and enjoying, you know, not being on my phone all the time mm-hmm. when I can be. I think that, you know, it's just time and age and growing up and living and traveling and having a better understanding of how the world works. You know, when you're young, you don't really know how, you're just carefree. You don't really think about that stuff. And now reflecting on it, I think it's just a matter of experience and knowing what really counts and what really matters. So Katie, I think, was a big part of that. We met, I know we were going to get into this at some point, but we met 12 years ago at a bar and it was like closing time and she was waitressing. She was bartending and I got invited to a party and it was like after hour, like they had shut down the bar. And I like walked over, I was like, hey, can I please have a drink? Like, I know it's out. And she was very annoyed. But she gave me a drink anyway. And then I just felt kind of bad. And I was like, listen, I'm so sorry. And I thought she was really cute.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave her my number. I said, hey, I'd love to take you out. And I wrote my number down and like gave her. And she turns around. She goes, you didn't put your name on it.
Oh my
and it
God.
Was just like such a, of course, like idiot moment. And then we exchanged info. And sort of the rest was history. And we ended up dating for many months, but meeting her was a huge turning point in my life. I started to grow up and become a better person, really. And she made me a better person. My priorities changed immediately once I committed to her.
Mm-hmm. So amazing.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's been 12 years.
It's crazy.
Okay, so something I feel like a lot of people don't know is that as we age, we accumulate something called senescent cells. So senescent cells are what cause symptoms of aging, such as aches and pains, slow workout recoveries, sluggish mental and physical energy associated with that middle-aged feeling. I'm not even middle-aged, and I often feel all of those things. They are also known as zombie cells. They're old and worn out cells. They are not serving a useful function for our health anymore, but they are taking up space and nutrients from our healthy cells. So what I love is that Qualia Senolytic is this incredible, incredible option. It removes these worn out senescent cells to allow for the rest of them to thrive in the body. All you need to do is take it for 2 days a month. The formula is non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free. The ingredients are meant to complement one another. And they factor in the combined effect of all of the ingredients together. They have a 100-day money-back guarantee. And I have had such a positive experience using Qualia products over the years. This one is just my newest favorite. Resist aging at the cellular level. Try Qualia Senolytic. Go to neurohacker.com/balanced for up to $100 off and use the code balanced at checkout for an additional 15% off.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, I am so excited to talk to you guys about BTR Nation. Ever since I met the founder, Ashley, she's coming on the show in just a couple of days, I have been obsessed with BTR Nation. They are on a mission to fix our broken food system, a girl after my own heart, one better for you snack at a time. When the founder, Ashley, lost both her parents to rare forms of cancer, she spent 4+ years eating horrible junk food in the hospital vending machines, which is, by the way, the only option at many hospitals. And she was inspired to figure out that we can do better. And she wants to make the world a better place with healthier food and healthier ingredients. So she took the snacks that she was making for her parents, which were low in sugar, and had seriously simple ingredients, as well as boosted with purpose-driven superfoods and adaptogens, and she brought them to the world. That's how BTR Nation was born. BTR Nation is not just another better-for-you brand making marginal changes for the food industry. They're doing it all. 1% of sales is donated to organizations committed to cancer research, holistic healing, and advocacy. BTR stands for Be Bold, Tenacious, and Resilient, which is the founder's family mantra. Exclusively for the Balanced Blonde listeners, use code BALANCED for 20% off site-wide and free shipping at btrnation.com. And you guys got married 2 years ago,
yeah,
two and a half.
Just over 2 years ago, yeah.
Yes, because I was super pregnant and it was one of the most beautiful weddings of all time.
Yeah.
It was so special.
It was a special weekend.
Yeah. What can you tell the listeners about that day for people who were not there?
Well, we got married up in Carmel at this place called the Santa Lucia Preserve. And it's this like huge plot of private land that apparently people live on. It's got to be the most beautiful place. Yeah.
Oh, so pretty.
One of her sorority sisters, her father owned property there and he got us permission to get married on this big piece of land. And we really fell in love with Carmel because we'd been there, I think, for her 30th birthday. And we love wine tasting and we love food and they have just unbelievable French food up there. And so we had been a couple times. And I love California. I love the California coast. And I think we kind of both thought like this would be a great place to get married one day. And when we were scouting out locations and stuff, we just kept coming to Carmel. We just like, nothing beats this. And yeah, but she did all, I mean, we had a wedding planner, but really Katie was like, you know, you haven't seen a Pinterest board until you see.
Oh my God. I could tell by the wedding. It was a phenomenal wedding. Like I have never seen something so beautiful.
Aw, thanks.
The white rose petals.
Yeah.
On the whole entire aisle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a memory that will always exist in
yeah.
my mind.
Aw,
it's
that's
beautiful.
So sweet. Yeah, me too. Me too. We want to go back. We talk about it every week.
Yeah, you need to.
I know.
You got to go. Remember, we were right next to you guys at the hotel
yeah.
when you got married. Our room was right next to yours.
Yep.
Such a beautiful place.
It was a beautiful place.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Wow. Well, we're so happy for you guys.
Yeah.
We love you guys.
We love you too.
So fun. And okay, everybody's going to want to know this. Do you guys want to have kids at some point?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. We've been talking about that for a couple of years. We were waiting for the right time. But yeah, we're on a mission now and we're trying to make it happen and we'll see.
You're going to be the best parents. Today, you broke the internet. So this is coming out next week. So last week, you broke the internet. There's a photo of you in a pregnant belly.
Yeah.
And even I, who literally knew that you were doing this photo shoot, was like, oh my God, Katie and Joe. Wait,
I know.
Never mind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we did this sort of like guerrilla marketing campaign for this new single called Make a Baby, which is out. And we did a photo shoot with... I actually called you and I said, this is fun for the listeners. I called Jordan and I said, hey, I'm doing this photo shoot. The song is called Make a Baby and I need like pregnant models. Would you be willing? And you were down. And then like a couple of days later, we realized that like you weren't quite pregnant or showing enough.
Not showing
for the
enough.
Photo.
Yeah.
And so we have another one of our friends, Ashley Lipson, who is the girl in this photo where I'm like sort of resting against her belly. And it's just me and her belly, and we sort of cryptically put on Instagram just like the pregnant emoji and just blasted it out. And we did sort of, I mean, I have like family members still texting me, what's going on?
I almost texted you guys, even though it's so funny because you did call me to be a part of it. So I knew it was happening.
Yeah.
It's just one of those tricks of the mind. It's like, whoa.
Wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea was to sort of get, you know, people talking and talking about the song. But yeah, no, we're not pregnant, not yet. But the song was inspired by sort of, you know, talking about making a family.
Yeah.
And it's a really fun, goofy, playful song. But yeah, no, it comes from a serious place because I think we both want that. And yeah, so, you know.
That was amazing. I loved reading the comments. People were like, I don't think it's Katie because she's not even tagged.
Well, we had to. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. I know we had to call our folks like the night before. Like, hey, listen, there's a photo coming out tomorrow. Just, you know, it's not us. We're not pregnant. And they were like, okay, thank God you told us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How fun.
Yeah.
How do you come up with all these creative ideas? Are they all you? Do you
no,
have a team?
I mean, I have a great team, an amazing PR team and social media team and people that do, you know, do this for a living. Because to me, it's like I'm getting better at it, but navigating social media is not only is it one of my least favorite things to do, it's just hard to be that quippy and creative on a daily basis where you're trying to build engagement and generate more, you know, of an audience. And so, yeah, we have an incredible team and a lot of like that idea actually, I think came from, I think Gravy's manager said, what if we split the photo? So it's not the two of you and reveal the song right away. It's actually just you and a pregnant belly and then Gravy. And I think Gravy posted his later in the day and it was more just to sort of build that buzz. But yeah, I mean, when you try to, I'm an independent artist and have been for 10 years and what you're trying to do is just use what you have with the resources you have to,
you know
how that goes.
I do.
Yeah.
I absolutely do.
Yeah.
So, okay. So for those of us who don't know the music industry that well, independent artist means you're not on a label.
Yeah.
But you were on a label previously.
I was on a label. I've been over the years signed to several, but I was at Hollywood Records for the majority of my career. And then once the contract was up, a new president came in, we went our separate ways and I started my own company called 808 Records. And now I am my own functioning label and everything that I put out is through my label. And so, yeah, so this is actually the Make a Baby song is my first release with another artist through my label.
Oh, cool.
Which is really interesting. So, yeah, it's interesting, but there's like so much more paperwork when you're doing this on your own.
Oh, for
and like
sure.
Trying to know the finances and how the business models work. And I'm still trying to like catch up and have a great lawyer, but I am, you know, constantly trying to keep myself educated on how it works and how to negotiate things. And that's been probably the biggest challenge of the last, I would say, 5 years of my career is like really doing it all on my own. And on my own, of course, caveat being that I have a huge team with me, but it is really, you know, It's on my own. I mean, I'm doing this without a major marketing arm, without huge, you know, super deep record label pockets. So you have to be more creative than ever. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's why you have a team with you. Creative
totally.
Minds. Yeah.
But you prefer it as opposed to being on a label because you probably have so much creative freedom and
so much
that.
Creative freedom. No one's telling you when you need to put out a new song, a new release, when you need a tour.
Mm-hmm.
Those were all demands that that big labels that still make of their artists. And yeah, I'm just so blessed to be in the position that I'm in because I have that freedom now to do it the way I want to do it and when I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And around my schedule now, you know, starting a family and stuff, like that's going to be even more important in
yeah.
the years to come. So yeah, I mean, it's great. And financially, it's better too, to be mm-hmm. honest with you, because you know what you're spending and you know what's coming in.
Yes.
And you don't have a label taking 99% of it.
Yeah,
which is
that's
great.
The thing
yeah.
that I hear about.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so
it's wild.
Up.
I don't know how young artists do it do it anymore.
I know.
It's just
it's crazy.
It's hard.
It's freaking crazy. But you're doing it the smart way.
Yeah.
But it's the harder way because
it
you
is.
Also have to do the business side of things.
Yep.
And then something that I feel like a lot of people don't know about you is that you're a songwriter for other artists.
Yeah.
And you've written some huge songs.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what some of those are?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I've had some big songs in my career that I didn't pen, but I would say the biggest song that I wrote was not for me. It was for Leona Lewis back in 2008. I wrote a song with Ryan Tedder, who's the lead singer of One Republic, and we wrote Bleeding Love, which was originally supposed to be on my album. And this is back when I was with Hollywood Records. And it was like one of those cliche classic stories of the A&R team hating the song and thinking like, oh, this isn't right. It's not good. They were like super condescending in their emails too. They're like, what is this bloody heart record? I was like, it's called Bleeding Love and it's a great song.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we don't think it's for you. And this is a great example of why being independent is great because they basically said, we don't want you to put this out. And I kind of had to, and it worked out because actually, instead of that song, we put out Leavin', which would become my first number one record.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan Tedder pitched it to Simon Cowell, who was the judge on American Idol, but also X Factor. And Leona Lewis had just won X Factor in the UK. And he pitched it. He heard it. He loved it. And Leona recorded it. And she's got just the most beautiful powerhouse voice you've ever heard. And she recorded the song, and then all of a sudden it was just the biggest song of mm-hmm. not just the year, but of like the decade. It became,
literally.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a really validating moment in my life as a writer, because at that point, I know people had seen me as a singer and a vocalist, but there's no question there's a little bit more credibility that comes with writing your own stuff. And all of a sudden I could feel the room change, you know, where other writers and other people that I grew up loving and admiring were coming up to me and saying like, hey, good job. And that was
yeah.
like everything for me,
yeah,
you know?
So, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was a great moment.
Yeah, especially.
And funny enough, that song I just found out was just re-released by a Latin artist named Carol G. And Carol G and Tiesto just did a remix called Contigo, which is, it's in Spanish,
uh-huh.
but they use Bleeding Love as the chorus.
Whoa.
So they sampled the song. So now it's like a whole new generation is getting
yeah.
to hear Bleeding Love, which is super cool.
Oh, I need to listen to that.
Yeah.
And especially after the rejection, semi-rejection from like your label not wanting you to sing it. It's kind of like, look how big this song
is. You want to hear a great spiteful story
yes,
about that?
Yes, please.
So the song comes out, it becomes huge. And we're sitting down at the ASCAP Awards, which is, the ASCAP Awards are for writers, and it honors the best songs of the year, the biggest songs of the year. And Bleeding Love was nominated for best song of the year and wins. And the guy who wrote that email, who was like, this isn't a good song,
uh-huh.
was sitting at my table.
Oh my God.
And we win. It's like song of the year, Jesse McCartney, Ryan Tedder, and we get up and it's like, the biggest writers of our time are in this room. And then there's John. And I could see, and I kind of let him off the hook, but I did give him one of those like winks at the table. And he was like, you're right, you're right.
Oh my God.
It was a really full circle moment.
That is such a good moment.
Yeah.
It's such an amazing song.
Oh, thanks.
Oh my God. What are some other songs that you've written for other artists?
For other artists, I mean, I did some Disney stuff for Ashley Tisdale, and I don't know if Hillary ever recorded any. I think she recorded something, but I don't know if it ever came out. Who else? There's been some other Disney artists, a lot of indie artists. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was definitely by far the biggest. And then, of course, you know, some of my own stuff, right? So had, you know, Body Language, which was a big record that I did with T-Pain back in 2008 or 9, I think charted in the top 10. And that was an interesting story where I recorded back in the day. Pepsi used to do, can I say Pepsi on this show?
Yes.
They did this thing called Pepsi Smash, where it was like other pop artists would sing other pop artist songs that were in the top 10. And I sang Buy You a Drink by T-Pain with my band and played it and recorded it. It was on YouTube and it went viral on YouTube. This is the early days of virality and social media. And T-Pain came up to me at the Video Music Awards, was like, hey man, I heard your song. Thanks for doing it. We should work together. And then within months, so I would say that was probably the second biggest record that I wrote after that. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind of writing and recording. And for every hit song you have, there's hundreds that will never see daylight.
Totally.
You know?
And do you ever go through writer's block or times where you're just creatively not feeling it?
Uh-huh. Totally. All the time. I mean, I think between each project, there's at least a year or two that goes by where I just need to decompress and think of what it is I want to do next. And then one day I wake up and it's like, okay, I have a good idea. And it's usually just like a small little seed of something. And then it motivates me to get in the studio. And then once I'm in the studio again, it just starts flowing and coming out. But there's definitely been times where I've forced myself to get in the studio just for the sake of doing it. And sometimes it works, but often it doesn't. Most times it doesn't. And I just find myself like deflated leaving the studio. Like, this was awful. This sucks. Like, so yeah, I think you need time to sort of live life and get inspired by things, by new things that happen to you. And I think writing about things that you've been through and know about are the most powerful and certainly the most inspired and honest. So yeah, I definitely try to take time in between projects and think of what's next.
It's hard as a fellow creative person.
It's hard.
I get it. Like, there are the times where you feel like you're on fire and the times where it's just, you can't
I feel like it flows out of you more than anyone I've met, though.
Really?
Like, yeah. First of all, your writing is incredible.
Thank
and I've
you.
Read some on social media. I read all your stuff. And you just have, like, it just feels like it flows out of you. Like, do you feel like you ever get blocked up?
I do.
Okay.
I totally get blocked.
Well, it doesn't look like it.
Thank
from what
you.
I read.
I mean, I have my times where I'm, like, blocked and I'm feeling sick and down and... And then I have the times where I feel really aligned and it does channel through and feels like it's coming from another realm for me, because that's kind of my thing.
But you know what you're
thing.
Good at is you're really good at sharing when it is that way for you. Mm-hmm. Whereas many people, including myself, they don't want to talk about when they're blocked or feeling down or sick or alone, or just they don't share that part of it. They only show and reveal in front of the curtain what's shiny and polished. And you're good at showing all of it, which I think is what makes you so relatable and accessible to so many people, because it's like this real spirit that you get out of you, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I try. I think it's important, because we're all human and we all feel these things.
We could all take a lesson from you. It's really nice. You know, I mean, there's literally, I go through so many days where I'm like, oh, what am I doing? What is this? This is awful. And I could never dream of sharing that. And when I see you do it, it's like, oh, that's kind of interesting angle. It's inspiring to do that.
I think your fans would love it, by the way. They just want to get, they just want time with you.
Yeah.
Like, they want to hear from you.
Yeah.
What's your favorite song that you've ever done, whether you wrote it or whether you didn't write it, if you have?
Favorite song. I think that this last project, this All's Well EP that is coming out April 5th, it's the new EP. It's a collection of like five songs. One is a remix. So it's actually four songs. But what was fun about this project and most exciting is that I got to get back in the studio and play everything live with a real band, which I haven't done in so many years. And I think it's an art form that's really lost in pop music today because everyone, and in many ways it's great, but you know, most people now sit behind their computer and program everything behind a laptop. And modern technology has made it so easy for writers in the middle of nowhere that are trying to write something great, and that's great. But I really just missed playing with live musicians. And for this project, I'd written these songs, and Morgan Taylor Reid, who produced it, came in and was like, you know, these songs are very 70s Hall & Oates sounding. Why don't we actually get real players and play like they used to? Which shouldn't be like this, you know, groundbreaking idea, but it really kind of felt like it at the time. It was like, oh yeah, we can still do that.
Yeah.
So we rented a studio in Santa Monica called The Village Recording Studio. It's a legendary studio where so many classic albums have been recorded. And we put together drums, bass, guitar, rhythm section, live horns, live lead guitar, and basically recorded the songs live, like from beginning to end. We would just do 10, 15, 20 passes of each song and then just like pick and choose the best parts. But it was just so inspiring to be playing again with live players. And these are guys that have played and girls that have played on people like John Mayer and Avril Lavigne and Alanis Morissette, like some of the most legendary albums. And it's just like, it was just so cool to do that all over again. And it made the song sound very authentic, which I loved.
Yeah, that's so cool. I can't wait to listen. Yeah. So that's what's coming out in March.
Yeah, it's the EP is called All's Well, and that's coming out April 5th.
Okay, April 5th.
Yeah.
Yep. Right before your birthday.
Right before my birthday.
Yeah, because you're in Aries.
I am in
and
Aries.
We're gonna get into that.
Oh, boy.
But, okay, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
I can't wait to listen. And then, something I was going to say. This is just worth mentioning. You've had the same manager forever, right? And I feel like that's so rare.
Yeah.
And she's like part of our group of friends. I mean, everybody loves her.
Yeah,
shout out to Sherry.
Shout out to Sherry Condor.
Yeah.
Sherry was one of the first people that sort of, just a quick brief history. She had this kids group called the Sugar Beats. This was before Dream Street, sort of in between my, you know, Soap and Dream Street. I was like 9 years old. And at the time I had been doing a lot of voiceovers in New York City, like for, you know, Golden Grahams and Charmin and like doing little jingle singing and, you know, singing like cha-cha-cha Charmin. And like, and so she calls and she's like, hey, I have this kids group. Do you know of any male singers? I'm having trouble finding young male singers. And this woman recommended me and I went to her place and she had this kids group called Sugar Beats. And it was basically young children singing old 60s, 70s, 80s retro music. It was sort of the catalyst for Kids Bop. Do you know Kids Bop?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it was like the precursor to Kids Bop. She kind of invented this idea. And it was a huge success. She did like, I don't know how many albums, 6, 7, 8 albums, and they sold tons of records. And that was how we met. And then years later, when it was time to do my solo project, she brought me in. She's like, do you want to do some solo music? And one of the first songs I recorded, in fact, I think it was the first song I recorded, was Beautiful Soul.
Wow.
And it was before I was even signed. And we had this song just sitting around.
Oh my God.
Anyway, so Sherry's been around for a long time, 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And she's still my manager and still she's family. You know?
Yeah. That's so special.
I know.
And I feel like that's so rare.
It is.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into your astrology.
Okay.
Did you look at your birth chart? Not your birth chart. Do you know your birth time?
I think I sent it to you. I think it's 11. Yeah. Pull it up.
And then we're going to look it all up, which is so fun. Oh, yeah. You sent this to me. Okay, cool. Yeah.
11 something.
11. Oh, you actually have this. You have your chart right here. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So you are in Aries, which we knew.
Yeah.
Your moon sign is Leo, which is so fitting to you because that's the person who's on stage, the performer, the person who's comfortable.
You have to tell me what all these things mean.
I'll tell you what all of this means. And then you're a Cancer rising. So that's your... Okay, so let me just explain all this to you. So your rising is your outer appearance, your public appearance, the way that people see you.
Okay.
And so I'm not surprised that you're a Cancer rising because Cancers are sensitive. They're in touch with their emotions.
Yeah.
They're very easy to connect with.
Mm-hmm.
They're caretakers, nurturers of the people in their lives. Okay. Like, that's how your friends see you.
Uh-huh.
And then your moon, that's your emotional landscape.
Okay.
So, like, your heart and how you process your feelings.
Okay.
A Leo moon is so comfortable, like, in the public eye,
okay,
which just makes a ton of sense. Okay. Because it's hard for a lot of people. It would be hard for a lot of people to do what you do.
Uh-huh.
But this Leo moon gives you confidence. It gives you fire.
Yep.
It's a fire sign just like your Aries sun. So you're double fire,
okay,
with a little bit of water,
okay,
which is the Cancer that, okay, balances you out.
Puts the fire, yeah, out a little bit.
And then your sun. That's just like, you know, that's your identity. That's who you are. And you're such an Aries because you're quick with your ideas. Like, Aries are so passionate.
Yeah. So, I definitely feel passionate, for sure. Like, that definitely, all those things sound pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll also look up your human design because,
okay,
we have your time, but we'll do that in a second.
Okay.
I also, Jonathan, wrote a question for you that I have to ask.
Okay.
If you could collaborate with five artists,
Who
would be your top, or maybe three, five, okay, is a lot. Who would be like your dream collaborations?
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
Okay. I mean, it would have been so fun. I mean, it would have been, he never would have done it. But I mean, Prince to me was like one of my favorite human beings. Just, he was just a musical genius, and that I don't think we've seen since on that level. I just remember growing up watching videos of him and listening to all of his albums. Prince and Michael were like why I got into pop music, and Elvis Presley for sure. So Prince would be one. I would say, I know Jonathan will like this, John Mayer is definitely one of my favorites. And I've got a great story about John Mayer from Australia.
Oh my God, but we have to hear.
But yeah, John Mayer. And I would also say, what's going to be my third artist? Oh man, I mean, it's funny because I know her, but Carole King was like a huge influence. My parents listened to Carole growing up, and she's like one of those songwriters that I admired and loved so much. She actually came to a studio session of mine recently, which was like,
oh, cool,
just such a cool moment. I don't know that she's really performing much anymore, but it would be so cool to have at least a writing session with her. I would say those are probably three of my, and of course, Paul McCartney.
Oh my God. You know, Jesse McCartney and Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of has
McCartney
to happen.
McCartney squared.
Love that. Love him.
Yeah.
Love everybody that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
So what's the John Mayer story?
Oh, so the John Mayer story is in 2006, I was in Australia and I was on the Tonight Show of Australia. It was called Rove Live. And I was performing that night and found out that John was performing the same night. And we met backstage and he was just like the most gracious person, because I had just released this second album. It was the Right Where You Want Me album. It was my sophomore release. And there was a song on there that you would have known if you dug through the album and listened to it. It was a deep cut, like a B-side. And he was like, hey man, I really like that song, Right Back in the Water. And this was like not a single. And like, you know, I'm very, like, my just came off my debut release. He's John Mayer, multi-Grammy award winning. And I think he saw us perform this, or he saw my guitar player, knew he was fantastic. This guy, Dory LaBelle, who's still one of my dear friends. But he said, I really love that song. And I was like, really? Right Back in the Water? That song? It's like track 8 and was never going to see the light of day. And then all of a sudden I went home and I just remember listening to that song like over. I was like, wow, this is really good. And then we went to an award show the next day called the ARIA Awards, which are like the Grammys in Australia. We both lost and we ended up at the same hotel bar having drinks at the bar and just end up going back to his room and jamming for like 3 hours in his room, like drinking out of his mini bar.
Oh my
and
God.
And he played, he's like, ready for this? And he plays Right Back in the Water. Like,
no.
Knew it on the guitar.
No.
It was mind blowing. And
that
and Dory,
so cool,
the guitar player that I wrote it with, is sitting there and he's like, I can't believe John's playing my chords. And it was just like one of those moments you never forget. You
that's
know,
the coolest
like,
thing I've
yeah,
ever heard.
It's a really cool
so
moment.
So he memorized your song.
Like knew the song, memorized it, and was like playing with it. I'm singing my own song, John Mayer's accompanying my singing. It was just—
I wish that was on video.
It was so cool.
That's
me too.
So
we
cool.
actually have some of it on video, and it was really cool. Dory reached out and said, hey, do you mind if we share this? And he wrote back this really lovely email that was just like, you know, I think it's better that we don't share it. I'd like to remember that for just us. And he's like, send me the videos because I'd like to have them. But I'd prefer we didn't share it. Sometimes it's nice to not share everything.
Wow.
And it was like, he didn't mean it in like a, it was just a very
It's heartfelt.
It was such a heartfelt thing. And I was like, of course, you know, like, absolutely.
It's actually profound.
Yeah.
I mean, to hear, it's a good reminder for all of us.
Good reminder for all of us. And it also said, like, it was special for me too, you know, like, I don't need everyone to know about it, you know?
Yeah.
It was really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm such a huge John Mayer
fan. Mayer story.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. Love.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's something that people wouldn't know about you? Like, I know that your fans are listening. Hi to all the Jesse fans who are new here on the podcast.
Yeah.
What's something that you feel like people don't know?
There's so few things left.
I know.
I love food. That's not really a secret. I love barbecuing. You've been over to the house and you've watched me in action. But you know what I just recently took? I took a pottery class like a week and a half ago for the first time. And I am obsessed. I mean, it was an introductory class. I still know nothing about it, but I found myself to be quite good at it. And also just in such a peaceful place. Like, I haven't felt that way doing an activity since probably getting into food and cooking. And it makes a lot of sense because there's something very therapeutic about it. When you're hyper-focused on something and trying to make it special, like, it really brought me to this really peaceful place I haven't been in a while. So I think I'm going to start taking up pottery more often, like doing pottery classes, because I was just like, it's so creative, obviously.
Yes.
And you can just kind of get in your own world, and it's like an extension of your own body, and like you're creating this thing with your hands. And I also had a great teacher. We did it for Valentine's Day, Katie and I. We went to a pottery class. It was really sweet. And we made bowls.
Wait, this is so funny because I did a pottery class the day after Valentine's
Day
and we made bowls.
Was it your first class?
Yes.
You've never done it before?
No, and it wasn't like an official class. It was just at my friend's house and she had like instructions and we did it.
Did you love it?
I loved it.
Isn't it fun?
Yeah, and it's hard. My
it's
bowl
hard.
Was barely the shape of a bowl. Like, it was very square, but
there were a couple other people in our class and their bowls were plates.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't get mine to not be like a... I don't even know how to describe. It looks like a what you would put water for like a cat or a dog in. So I'm like, okay, that's what we'll use it for.
Yeah,
we'll use it for Hudson.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's so fun.
I loved it. I just really loved it. And I just found like, I think also like when you try something new, I don't know if you're this way, but I mean, it's not necessarily a good thing, I don't think, but I like immediately need to be good. It's like when I do something for the first time, I don't know if that what that means on my chart, but I really want to be great at it immediately. And so like there was a couple times where I'd go over to the instructor and like stand over her shoulder and watch. She's like, it's a little close. And like, and then when it is good, you're like, yes, that's awesome. I need to do that again. I don't know. I just think because it was a good result and a good bowl and then I can eat cereal out of it successfully,
yes.
I want to do it again.
That's fun. Yeah, no, I relate. I think all creative people are perfectionists.
Yeah,
it's
maybe.
Really hard not to be. Well, not all. Some to more degrees than others.
Yeah.
I'm such a perfectionist.
Yeah.
It's crippling.
Yeah.
So we got to push past that.
We got to push past that.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you ever get like nervous or anxious to go on stage?
Never to go on stage. I actually... relax. Like, I'm probably more anxious and nervous in everyday life, just driving to get groceries. I'm like, my mind is racing and thinking about things. When I get on stage, it's actually like it's like my total release, you know, like I'm at my most peaceful and it's just like my happy comfort zone. I mean, there's been a few performances that were nerve wracking. I performed for a couple of presidents over the years.
Oh, wow.
And that was like, terrifying. I performed back in 2005, I think it was. I think it was Bush. And it was like him, but also all of the armed forces at Ford Theater. And it was like the most, like everyone's in uniforms and you're trying to like loosen these people up, you know? And it was super challenging. And also definitely I had a lot of shakiness in my voice in the first early bars. But I think now like I've just done it so long that it's just feels like second nature to it. It's like my happy place. So
that's so good to hear.
Yeah.
It's so good to have.
But I definitely get anxious. I definitely have, you know, moments where I can't, like I have trouble turning my mind off at night, which I'm trying to work on. And I was listening to your podcast, how you're into, I think it was maybe one of your sponsors, but I think you probably do. What's the stuff, the powder, the magnesium?
Oh,
wow. So Katie and I started doing that.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's the magnesium breakthrough.
So I'm trying to work on that, where like I've started drinking that with cherry juice. Have you heard this thing?
Yes, that's so good for sleep,
yeah,
right?
So, yeah, and it's like totally changed like my whole sleeping life, which is really nice.
Oh my God, I have to do that.
So because I have a hard time shutting down.
Mm-hmm, same.
So because of anxiety, but you know,
I relate so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we have to look up. We're gonna look up your human design. I'm just gonna make my guess right now. Do you know about human design?
No.
Really? Okay. So human design, it's similar to astrology. There's five different energy types, and it's the way that you use your energy in the world. It's like gives you the best strategies for how to show up in the world and in your career.
Okay.
I think you're going to be a manifesting generator. So let's see if I'm right, which then I can tell you what that means. And the listeners probably know what I'm talking about because we're all
because they get it. Yeah.
We're into human design. Okay. Let's see here. I'm going to put your info in. I remember when your mom was telling me you were like 2 weeks late or something.
Yeah,
when she was
I was like 3 weeks
late. That is
I was a 10-month baby, basically.
Literally, I don't
just
know how
did not
she waited.
Come out.
the end of pregnancy is so tough.
I
like,
know.
She's
I know.
A trooper for
she
waiting.
Really is.
Because you were actually then supposed to be a Pisces. Yeah, your mom told me that when I was very pregnant with Atticus. And I was like, I cannot be pregnant for an extra month. I can't do it.
I know. It's crazy.
You're a manifesting generator.
So how did you guess that?
I knew it. Because just a lot of things that you've said and based on you. So manifesting generators, it's kind of like two types in one. And you're the multi-passionate.
Okay.
Multi-hyphenate. So you do so many things. Like you love singing and you love acting and you love cooking and pottery. And so basically manifesting generators can do so much at once. And you guys can handle more like energy than any of the rest of us, which is so cool. And you're a 5'2", which is called the self-motivated hero.
Okay.
And I'll send you all this.
I love these words.
I know. This is my friend's app and she's amazing, Jenna, with emotional authority. So you make decisions kind of based off of your emotions or your gut, which is a good thing.
Okay.
Like you tune into your emotions to make those decisions.
Yep.
This is what your chart looks like.
Okay. It looks like a guitar.
It does. Yeah. The chart, like it literally
looks like a mandolin.
A foreign language until you get to know it. But I'm going to send you all the information. But for all the listeners, like especially your diehard fans, to know that you're a manifesting generator, a 5'2", is so cool. So you're here to chart a previously unseen life path.
Okay.
So there's basically nobody who's paved the path for you, for what you're here to do.
Right.
That's going to be you. But you're paving the path for so many people to come.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is completely you. You're quick to master new things.
Okay.
Like we were just talking about.
Like my clay pot.
Yes. You can turn the sense of unknown into a sense of wonder and discovery. Your energy is spontaneous and in the moment. You have to do things that you want to do. You can't do anything that other people are kind of telling you to do
true.
You should do.
That feels right.
I'm going to send you all this stuff.
I got to come here more often. This sounds great.
For a whole deep dive.
This is awesome.
I know. We'll have to look up Katie too.
Yeah, for
sure.
I mean,
this was the first thing I did when Atticus was born.
Katie's the same as you. You're a Gemini, right?
I'm a Libra.
Oh, you're a Libra.
But we're both air signs.
Oh,
so
okay.
Like very super similar.
I heard you talking on your show about something. You said something about. Was it a rising? Do you have a rising?
Well, I just had a guest on the show who was talking really fast, and she said we're both Geminis, and I just went with it, but because I didn't want
that's what I heard.
I didn't want to tell her that she was wrong, like in the moment,
right.
I was later like, I think she meant we're just both air signs, which is very similar.
Gotcha. Yeah, Katie's a Gemini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a good. So you guys are fire and air, just like me and Jonathan.
Oh, really?
Leo. He's a Leo, and I'm a Libra.
Gotcha.
So fire, air. Atticus is fire like you. He's a manifesting generator like you. So he's going to learn a lot from you.
That's why I love that boy.
Yeah, I know. He loves you. I just saw, actually, a picture of you and Atticus popped up on my phone.
Oh, really?
Because it was exactly 1 year ago tomorrow that you guys were at our house.
Oh,
dinner.
Yeah. Was that really a year ago?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And isn't that crazy?
Like, that is crazy.
These things always happen to me where I'll see the same person 1 year later. Like, I've obviously seen you since then.
Yeah.
But, like, the date, just then it's crazy
that
it was
wild.
This week.
I can't believe that.
I know. Time is going so fast.
I got to be honest. I'm so excited to meet your new baby, but it's going to be hard to top Atticus.
I know.
He is kind of like the golden
goose.
Really
big shoes to fill.
Really big shoes to fill.
I'm glad it's a girl, this baby, because they're going to be so different. Like, I feel like if it was two boys, it's hard.
Because
honestly, like, Atticus is the light of our families.
Totally.
Like, he's just the light. But this girl, she's just going to be her own person, so different.
I always, like, I think going in, like, Katie and I have talked about this, I've kind of always leaned towards wanting to have a baby girl, up, like, up front and first. But I swear we've talked about, like, after meeting Atticus, like, I think maybe a boy would be awesome. Totally.
That is the best. I do think there's something fun about an older brother and a younger sister.
Totally.
Which you have. You have a sister and a brother.
I loved having a younger sister. Mm-hmm. Yep. I loved having both. But for Leah and I, we were together for, like, Leah and I were alone for like 5 years. It was just the two of us before Timmy came. Timmy was a kind of a whoopsie baby.
Yeah.
Which she doesn't mind me saying. Timmy and I are 10 years apart.
Yeah.
So we like so different. But yeah, having a younger sister was awesome.
That's so fun.
And I think she liked having an older brother. I have to ask her.
Yeah, we need to ask her. I'm sure she did. It's what every girl who doesn't have that wishes she had.
Yeah.
It's like a protector. And you guys are all so close, which is so cool.
I love them.
They're the best.
Yeah.
You have the best family.
Great fam.
Totally. Okay, so final question.
Okay.
What's on the horizon that you're excited about?
Well, I'm prepping right now for a big U.S. tour. We've got 24 shows, I think, around the United States, and it's doing incredibly well. It's like one of the best-selling tours I've had in like 10 years.
Really? That's so cool.
It's so cool. I'm so excited that the fans, just like, I have to say, it is so humbling to have an audience of fans that still choose to come to my shows and still want to show up, you know, because so often it's so rare in pop music, especially for that to happen over multiple decades. And it's just so, so nice and fulfilling, you know, to like know that people care enough to take, you know, their hard earned dough and come out and spend money and like watch the show. So with that being said, we are putting together like this amazing show. We're in the middle of working on my set list right now of what I want to play. And editing it and producing it. So the tour starts April 12th and we start in Austin, Texas, and it'll be around the US for like 5 weeks. So all of my time and energy right now is spent just sort of making that the best it can be.
Yeah.
And then maybe traveling overseas in the summer or fall. I think we're going to try and do some dates in Southeast Asia and maybe Australia. I haven't been to Australia in many years. So I think it's like, for me, it's traveling this year and touring, and maybe we'll see, maybe even starting a family. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
A new little bestie for Atticus and our future daughter.
Yeah.
It'll be so, that's like totally happening.
Totally.
And then are you performing in LA?
Yep. So my last show of the tour is here in LA. We try to always end it in LA, and we'll be at the Wiltern, and I think it's like May 16th.
Okay.
So,
okay. Well, we'll have to come.
Will be there.
I'm going to be super
pregnant.
You got
to get Atticus. Have you seen the little kid?
Yes.
Earmuffs?
That's the plan.
Because it's loud for little ears.
Yeah, it is.
But if you get those things, it is awesome. And
I want to bring him.
Oh,
we're
for
also
sure.
seeing, do you know Trevor Hall?
Yeah.
We're seeing Trevor Hall at Red Rocks in June.
Oh, okay.
Beginning of June. We're bringing Atticus. So
oh,
I need to get
gosh,
him those
for
little
sure.
headphones.
It's loud there too. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then we have to bring him to see you.
Yeah.
And he's going to be like, I know him.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm so proud of you. You're doing
so
many
much.
Incredible things.
You too, Jordan.
It's so inspiring, and what a gift to have you here. Like, thank you for coming on.
I'm just sad we didn't get to do this earlier.
I know.
This was so fun.
Well,
you're so easy
it.
To talk to, and you're a pro, and you know how much I love you, and I love Jonathan and Atticus.
We love you,
and
too.
And baby girl.
Yes, we love you guys so much, and you're welcome back on anytime.
I'll be
the
back.
The next thing we have to do is have Katie and Jonathan here, and we
oh,
can
for
do
sure.
a couple
a little
episodes.
Couple thing? Oh, that would be so fun.
I feel like she would be so good on the
oh,
mic,
yeah.
too.
And she's got all the dirt, too.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. That's what people really want to know. Like, what
right.
goes on?
What goes on behind the scenes? That'd be a fun episode.
Totally.
Yeah, we're
okay.
down.
So we'll do it.
We'll do it.
Yay.
Yay.
Okay, well, I love you. Thank
love
you
too.
So much.
Thanks
Everybody listening,
me.
Check out the new single coming out on Friday.
Yep.
The tour.
Yep.
Everything.
Everything. Yep.
Yeah.
And
amazing.
We'll be back. We'll talk about it again.
Yes, we will. Yay.
Yay.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. I'm so happy that you're here. Come say hi on Instagram at The Balanced Blonde and tell me what your favorite part of this episode was. Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and send me a screenshot of your rating and review for a free Soul on Fire yoga ebook. See you next Wednesday. Love you guys.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.